and I chair this particular committee. And I'm looking forward to a very robust conversation tonight. Let me explain a couple of things. For those who are gathering, who are watching, thank you for joining us. This is a meeting of the Oversight Committee, and tonight's primary concern and primary time is to be given to our nonprofit performers and for them to give us updates. That's really where I want our time spent. That's really what my emphasis is. Our last one, 2 months ago, gave Portland Housing Bureau quite a bit of time to talk about where they're at and give us updates, which I appreciate. And tonight is about hearing from our partners. We have a couple of people to introduce to you tonight, which I will go into in just a moment. But again, for those who are joining us, let me tell you that this is a meeting that is open to the public. It is not a public meeting. And what I mean by that is the agenda set for the meeting is directed by what I just articulated, the reporting out of our nonprofit performers and partners, and hearing what they're doing, how things are going, and then engaging around those concerns. If you, as a public person, have a concern, a thought, input, something that you'd like to weigh in on, I would ask you to utilize a chat function, and your questions may or may not have opportunity to be engaged with tonight. We do not, if I recall, in the set agenda have time for public testimony. But again, this is a meeting of the Oversight Committee, and it is the intent to hear from our nonprofit partners. So I would encourage you to interact with and engage with Portland Housing Bureau staff, which will indicate themselves as they have opportunity to engage and dialogue. So thank you very much for being here. I appreciate your presence. Accountability is very important. Transparency is very important in making sure that people are involved. The second thing, the second disclosure that I want to make is you will see that my name shows up twice in the meeting. And it shows up twice because I have two instruments that I'm using in order to be able to interact and connect. My webcam is not functioning correctly, so I am using my iPad so you can see me and hear me. And then I have it on my desktop so that I can see everyone else at the same time. So that is why you see my name twice. The other request I have, or kind of instructive statement around tonight, is as much as possible, it would be great to see your face. It's a request, I can't enforce it, but it would be great to see your face. But we are not in the same room, we are on the same Zoom. And the concept of a Zoom platform is to create the opportunity to have that connectivity, and it just helps for the sake of interacting. For those who cannot do so, it will be what it is. But if you are a presenter and you are telling the story, then we certainly want to see your face while you do that. I think those are the essential kind of housekeeping things. When you are not talking, please keep your Zoom muted. You should be able to hover over the screen. You will see a microphone icon and make sure there's a red slash through it. And then it will show up on the screen, as you can see down by the names of the participants, that red little dash on the microphone. Second thing is, if you'd like to change your name, you can go to participants and click on yourself, and there will be a space for you to put the name that you want to be called by there. So I think that is essentially it. Welcome again. It is, if you can believe it, the 9th of July. And we are running through 2020. I'm going to do a roll call of the Oversight Committee members and make sure that everyone is here, and then we will get going. Once I call your name, merely just say present or here or something to that effect. All right, I will start with Marlon Holmes.
Here.
Okay, excellent. Dr. Lisa Bates.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Dr. Bates. as I'm running through the names of my team. Sheila Holden.
Here.
Welcome, Sheila. Good to see you tonight. New to the Oversight Committee, voted in a little while ago, John Washington.
Here, Dr. O. And thank you. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Also new to the Oversight Committee, having gone through the process of being interviewed by Dr. Bates and Felicia Tripp and myself, is Aquiles Montes.
Here. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see you. And then we have also new to the Oversight Committee, Gabrielle.
Here. Good evening, all.
Good evening and welcome. I'm looking for my other committee members. Did I miss any?
I thought I saw Karen.
Dr. Edwards?
Maybe she hasn't gotten on yet. She registered, though.
Okay. I don't see any other Oversight Committee members. I think I'm missing any. All right.
I'm present, Virgie.
Ah, phone line. Yes. Hello, Miss Virgie.
Hello, Pastor.
Hey, I'm glad you're here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate your commitment and presence. All right, as others join, then I will identify them. Tonight's committee, our meeting is as follows. Hopefully you received the agenda. I'm going to talk through it briefly, and then we're going to get going. Our first will be program updates from Portland Housing Bureau, and then we will have a home ownership update also from our in regard to PHC and the work the PHC is doing. And then we will look through and listen to our nonprofit partners who are doing incredible work in the city, give us updates on how things are happening. And again, let me emphasize that my hope tonight is to give ample opportunity for the presenters to present and questions to be interacted with related to what's going on in development. After which, if Jillian is on the line, then we will have a brief Williams and Russell update. And I will talk a little bit, or Marlon Holmes will talk about our I-5 project update, which has a little bit of noise going on in the city, just a little bit. So without further ado, Shannon, Director Callahan.
Good evening, Dr. Holt and members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to welcome the new members to the committee and thank you for your service. Please know that I and every member of the Housing Bureau team are here to help you in any way with any information you need to complete your oversight role. And I look forward to seeing you and meeting some of you in actual person sometime in the future. I just wanted to say that I'm really proud of the work that you'll hear tonight from our team members and our community partners in the face of so much turmoil with the COVID pandemic. Our partners have really done an amazing job adapting their work to make sure that contractors are safe on the job and that the affordable housing projects are under construction or moving forward. That has been no small feat, I know, but it's amazing that the projects and developments are proceeding. I also just wanted to let you know that in addition to our regularly scheduled work, the Housing Bureau has been working on three new areas related specifically to the COVID pandemic, which I thought the committee would like to be apprised of. They relate to the Local Relief CARES Act funding from the federal government that is coming to the city of Portland. And we expect that City Council is going to take up the issue of funding and start to make some preliminary decisions next week. related to additional funds for renter stabilization to help renters pay their rent who have been affected by the COVID pandemic. We'll be allocating a pool of what we expect to be $15 million to a pool of funds that we have been able to accumulate as well as the county. And we will be prioritizing BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and people of color in how we program those funds. And we've been going about that process for a few weeks now. I also wanted to let you know that I believe that we will be receiving new funds for homeowner stabilization on focused work with three culturally specific community partners to address issues that are relating to families that are having lending or mortgage issues or predatory lending. So we also will have a small pot of direct financial assistance, and our team has been programming those funds so that we are able to prioritize homeowners that we have helped with down payment assistance loans and or home repair loans in the last 10 years, which I know is something that I'm sure you're all as concerned about as we are, which is making sure that the folks that we've worked to stabilize or create into new homeownership opportunities can make it through this pandemic, and that we as a city are prioritizing those households and families. And finally, I know I don't want to take a long time of your time this evening because I know you have a lot of really great presentations. But you are going to have a presentation on the 5020 North Interstate project, which has been unable to move forward at this time due to an inability to close on their construction loan. I have given the project two extensions to see if there's a possibility that they can secure the funding they need. The present extension expires at the end of July, and I do intend to extend that through the end of this calendar year. But before I did that, I wanted to make sure that this committee had a chance to hear more directly what's going on with the 5020 project and where we are. So, you know, the other thing I just want to make clear as we're in this abundantly clear is that our commitment to the community in the North and Northeast oversight strategy stands, and specifically how it relates to the Black community and the creation of new home ownership. So, you know, I think we have taken some extraordinary steps to try to get a 5020 to the point it has today, including, you know, providing an additional $4 million construction loan that we were borrowing against future short-term home repair, a future home repair loan funding. And as you know, that we in this committee dedicated the last $1 million we had at the present time in our development funds to try to buy the units down when we were moving to our portion of closing the project. So with that, I just wanted to let that be known at the outset. I am, of course, able to answer any questions you might have, but I know you have a very aggressive schedule, and it's nice to see so many of you, even if it is just virtually.
Thanks, Director Callahan. Appreciate it. Any questions from the Oversight Committee members? You can just weigh in if you've got a question. You just unmute and go for it. All right, no questions. Then we will move forward.
Dana, I'll share your slides.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'll get started. That's all right, Dr. Hope.
Perfect.
Okay, cool. My name is Dana Ingram Shepherd, and I manage the Neighborhood Housing Preservation Team at the Housing Bureau. And I will go through this fairly quickly so that we can allow as much time as possible for updates. And I regret that I was not able to get the presenter's name on here, but Shalonda Menifee from the Portland Housing Center is on the Zoom call, and she will give a quick update at the end of my quick housing update. So can I just make sure, Shalonda, hopefully you're there. Did I see you? Shalonda, can you just verify that you're there?
Dr. Holt, Jillian just joined, and I did see Shalonda as one of the
Okay.
I am here.
Okay.
I'm on the devices, so sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure you were there. That's totally fine. And also, just to let you all know that Ira Bailey is also on the Zoom call, should there be any questions at the end of this quick presentation. So I'll go ahead and just get started. The reminder here is that of our homeownership goal, and that is to create 110 new homeowners through the homeownership preference policy with PHP resources by early 2022. And how we achieve that goal is through our down payment assistance loans. Currently, the Portland Housing Center, also known as PHC, is providing homebuyer education and counseling for those preference policy households. And they have an assigned counselor, that is Shalonda, who's working with that population of folks that we refer over to the organization. And then there's the Deep House for New Construction. So PCRI and their new developments, and they also provide support through the homebuyer education and counseling for the homeowners, the households that the Housing Bureau have referred from the preference policy. And then there's the development of the 82 affordable homeownership units through our partners Habitat for Humanity and Proud Ground. And you'll hear a little bit more about those units later on this evening. Next slide, please. All right, so the last time we met in May, you all did support us using all the funding sources as a part of the goal. So as of today, 51 households, we are at 51 households towards that goal of 110, but there's a total, we continue to report everyone that has become a homeowner through the preference policy. So that number is 64. And just as a reminder, we have created, even amidst the pandemic, 4 additional new homeowners since the last time we reported out to y'all in May. And you can take a look at that slide for just a moment. The different funding sources. I guess I should take a little bit of time for folks that this may be their first time joining us.
Dana, this is Jillian. Can you remind me what CET is?
Construction Excise Tax. It was the citywide funding. Thank you all for that.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yes.
So, Dana, could you talk about how, because we do have a lot of new people,
yeah.
What that was, and then what no subsidy means?
Yes, absolutely. So the construction excise tax, the oversight committee actually advocated that for about a year and a half to 2 years before Shannon had come in and actually was able to identify those funds and dedicate it to preference policy households. And so that gave preference policy households an opportunity to buy outside of just the interstate corridor. And so you'll find out later in my summary that those funds went fairly quickly because people were able to purchase on the open market outside of the higher price area. And then we have the North Northeast TIF funds, tax increment financing funds, that were a part of the initial North Northeast strategy. And then we have the Prosper Portland funds. We received another $1.6 million from Prosper Portland to serve folks between 100% AMI and 120% AMI. And that's been helpful as well. And for the folks that did not receive any PHP subsidy, those are people that have identified through the preference policy, but for one reason or another did not use any subsidy. The reasons for that could be that they ended up being over income or they purchased outside of an area where there were funding, things like that. So, all right. Then the next slide, please. All right, so I mentioned the 82 units with PHP investments through Habitat for Humanity and Proud Ground. And so here are the timelines. They're slightly off. I got an update from Habitat for Humanity yesterday. They're slightly off, but not by more than a month. So just give or take a month in these estimated construction completion timelines. So we will have another 24 units by the end of this calendar year. And again, all of which go to preference policy households, all 24. And then we have the Kilpatrick, which is phase 2. Those are 18 units. And then we have the 50-20 condos. It does say 40 units because currently 40 units are dedicated to preference policy households, but there are an additional the additional units in the project. And again, I think you'll hear more about 5020 coming up later. And then on the far right side, you see buyers reserved. And what that means is we received a commitment from preference policy buyers and a strong interest into going into one of those units. All right, and of the 51 households towards our goal, here is the race and ethnicity information and the household income. Hopefully that you can see that well enough, but what it does say, if you can, if it's too small, is that 90% of those homeowners are Black. And that was our goal, to serve communities of color and Black folks. All right, and you could take a second, a little bit, just to look at that, the household income information too. And Jillian, I do want to follow up to your question from last time. I'll do that at the end about the household income below 60%. All right, next slide, please. All right, so before I get into the remaining resources, I do want to just provide a quick update again, as I did before, as to the work of our partners and what they are doing. And so far, out of the 64 homeowners that we've created and the partners have created with their support, actually, the breakdown as far as which organizations have given that support. So the African American Alliance for Homeownership did create 9 homeowners, and that was from our initial round of homeownership. And then PCRI, and I'm sorry, they had a couple of recent closings, so I don't know if it's 12 or 13 that they've created new homeowners and supported. And then Portland Housing Center is 40 new homeowners through their support. And so that leaves us with the remaining resources. So PCRI actually had 13 as of a couple of weeks ago, but there's just 11 left. So two households actually, they just completed the Blandina project, which was 6 units, and 2 of which went to preference policy households. So now they're working with 11 more preference policy households. And just to let you all know, these 11, PCRI has dedicated themselves to serving and helping the folks from the original list that was referred to see them through until homeownership. So there has been no additional, except for a few here and there that a couple of households directly wanted to work with PCRI and their staff. But other than that, they have dedicated themselves to serving those folks that originally were referred over to them. And then there is one Prosper Portland down payment assistance available that has not been awarded. And then there are no more down payment assistance funding available for Portland Housing Center. So at this point, Portland Housing Center is identifying and referring households over to the new developments that we spoke about. And then there's the construction excise tax, which went fairly fast once we started, we released those funds. So again, these are all resources for preference policy households only. We're not talking about all resources. Next slide. All right, so here's just a quick summary. So the 10 citywide DPALs were utilized within 1 year. That means 10 new homeowners within 1 year. That's pretty fast. And so again, it just lets us know that there are a lot of options outside of the URA. It was pretty flexible guidelines for the CET resources as well. And then the average purchase price of the 51 households that did receive some subsidy is $346,918. We have, just to let you all know, we don't necessarily report out on the folks with no subsidy because it's a little bit trickier to gain all of the information when they aren't receiving the PHB resources. So this information is on the 51 households that we service the loan for. Then the new development units, the new development units are necessary for existing goals and timelines because they're, like the slide before, there's limited down payment assistance loans to be used on the open market. And also, I do want to just reiterate that the down payment assistance loans that I spoke about earlier, those are strictly for preference policy home buyers only. This slide, this presentation, we are speaking about the North Northeast strategy, which again, the funds are for households identified through the homeownership preference policy only. All right, and then Jillian, to your question from the last presentation, you were specifically wondering about the 60% AMI household and wondered, what I think, if I understand this correctly, you were just kind of questioning what it took for those homeowners to get into homeownership. And here's a list of resources used as recently as last year, and that's the Wells Fargo Lift Home Start Funds, Individual Development Account, and the OHCS funds. But in addition, since you asked specifically about the 60% AMI household, I just wanted to distinguish the difference. So a lender, a mortgage loan, is looking at just the buyer, but you just have to remember that the AMI for our eligibility is adjusted by household. So the same buyer, it could be the same income for a 60% AMI household versus 100% AMI household because it's adjusted. Does that make sense, Jillian?
It's adjusted based on the size of the household.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's like the perception that 60% AMI household is a lower income household. That is not always the case. Okay. Next slide is just questions for me. But if we can just hold it there for just a second, I'm going to ask Shalonda to just give a quick update about Portland Housing Center, and then her, myself, and you'll hear from PCRI later on in the evening, but I'll have Shalonda, myself, and Ira be available to answer those questions. Shalonda? Uh-oh, you're on mute still, Shalonda.
Okay, can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So updates with the Portland Housing Center, so far we have worked with 359 people that are still currently in our pipeline. 90 folks have been rescinded, and as in the previous slides, we have 40 people who purchased. We had one close yesterday. So, and we have two more people shopping right now. And let's see, what other updates? We have a total of about 23 people who have reserved for the Olin and Kilpatrick, and I'll let the other partners talk more about that. That's my quick update. And we're still working on getting interest for the 50-20. A lot of our clients are, we have several people that are mortgage ready, but because there are not enough down payment assistance available for them, it's a little more challenging for them to get loans, especially now with the stricter guidelines for being approved for a loan with the COVID going on. Right now we have, about 30% of our pipeline are currently mortgage ready, which means they are within 1 to 3 months with wanting to purchase or being able to purchase if they had down payment assistance, especially because of the stock out in the market is not quite affordable within North and Northeast Portland. So having more EPAL funds would be helpful. So that's my little summary.
Yolanda, I have a quick question. And maybe you said it and my sound went out for a second. You said that you have households that are mortgage ready, but there's no more down payment assistance.
Yes, there are two Prosper Portland down payment assistants available. I have one person waiting for their pre-approval for that one, and another one is having to get a reapproved, so to speak. There's no more down payment assistance within the preference policy. However, there may be other programs like the Oregon Bond Map or, being more creative with what is available.
I was just wondering how many mortgage ready folks are kind of waiting for down payment assistance to become available.
So
you had a rough number.
Number, let's see. So I'm looking at we have our preference policy report that I think this bureau gets every month. And I usually don't do this part, so.
I might be able, I have that report up in front of me. Let me see if it shows on here how many people are mortgage ready. And then Ira, if you know automatically from speaking to Sarah, you can jump in, but it might be right on this sheet here. So.
30%, but I don't know the actual number.
Yeah, we do it by percentage. We didn't break it out by numbers on the report.
Okay, it says clients whose mortgage readiness status increased was 17, but that's just an increase. So we'll get that information, Jillian. So that's a significant number if it's 30% of 350-something folks.
Hold on.
That's a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Actually, hold on. I'm looking at another report. Hold on one second. No, and it's not everybody. It's just our African-American clients. Okay. For a new report I was working on, sorry.
Thank you, Shalonda.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
There is a question from, okay. Well, Leslie's answering it. Achilles had a question in regard to the down payment. And the down payment is not a percentage, it is a dollar amount. And so maybe you want to speak to that on new construction, what that dollar amount was, and then on existing homes, what that dollar amount was. Dana, could you answer that for everyone?
Excuse me. Sure. The down payment assistance maxes at $100,000 per household. And then our investment into new construction was maxed at $125,000 household previously.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from the Oversight Committee? Thanks for the presentation. It's good information.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dana. We appreciate it. And Shalonda, thank you. That's good news. It's exciting to see that we're moving forward with home ownership opportunities and that people are taking advantage of it. We had no doubt that there would be, that the need was present, and we had no doubt that people would be interested in being able to do that. The thing I don't think any of us understood was how impacted families had been and how much time it would take to recoup and strengthen and support. And I think about, 2 years ago, there was quite a bit of energy around gaining that understanding as we were doing this work. So I appreciate everybody staying with the process and being committed to making this meaningful. So we're going to go now into our development project updates, and we are going to begin with PCRI and King and Parks, and then home ownership. So I will set my timer, and you will have at least 15 minutes to present. Not that you've got to take all of the 15, but you've got at least that. So is it Kimberly, or do you have some?
Can you hear me?
I can now. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, good evening. Good evening, everybody. I'm Kimberly Horner, the executive director for PCRI. I've been on board for approximately 1 year. July 1st was my 1 year mark. So it's been really a great journey working for PCRI. I'm going to split the presentation between myself and Daryl Briley. I will be reporting on King and Parks, and then I will turn the presentation over to Daryl to talk about our for sale project.
Hi, Ms. Virgie, yes?
No, I'm sorry, I was trying to mute.
Okay. All right, Kimberly.
Next slide, please. So as you know, King and Parks is located in the Piedmont neighborhood on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and Rosa Parks. The actual address is 6465 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The project itself is one building with a mix of 3 to 4 stories. It's approximately 80,000 square feet. There is a 1,200 square foot community space that is part of this project, and it was really developed to help mitigate historic displacement in the North Northeast community. The project is utilizing the geographic preference policy that's been developed by the Portland Housing Bureau. It's approximately 70 units. Of that 70 units, there's a mix. 12 of the units are scheduled to be 3 bedrooms, 38 of the units are 2 bedrooms, and there are 21 bedroom units. And when you total that, that's a total of 69 units. However, one of the units will be reserved for an on-site management person that works for PCRI. The project has amenities included with it. It's got a secured entry, an on-site management staff, a community room, laundry facilities on each floor, on-site parking, however it's limited. And it also has dishwashers and air conditioning units in each of the units. Next slide, please. So at this juncture, we have made a lot of progress with the project. It is scheduled to be completed. The construction is scheduled to be completed in the fall of 2020. We anticipate receiving our temporary certificate of occupancy on August 31st of this year. The punch walks have been completed for the townhouse side of the projects, particularly on the fourth floor. There is a third floor punch walk that's scheduled to be completed this week, and we're also installing the elevator this week. The brickwork is occurring on the exterior of the building. Mostly the pieces that are visible from MLK Jr. Boulevard and Rosa Parks Boulevard, those areas are complete. There is still some interior work with the brickwork that still needs to be completed. The staircase feature of the project has the treads all the way up, so we're very confident that we're going to be moving along a little more quickly than what we originally anticipated with this project, and it's had permanent power for the past couple of weeks. Let's see, the exterior of the building, as I said, is heading to the finish line. We also have an art component that will be included in this project, and my staff is currently in communication with a local artist that will be putting some art to the exterior of the project to memorialize the African American community and its migration from the South to Portland. We expect to have the King and Parks project stabilized by the end of this calendar year. And as many of you know, it is a tax credit project. So that is a very meaningful thing to make sure that we hit that deadline. That being said, I will now turn the rest of my presentation over to Daryl Briley so that he can report out on our Blandina for sale project.
Well, thank you very much, Kimberly. And I do apologize to one and all. We've got a bit of a webcam issue here today. So you just get to hear me, not see me, which is probably a blessing. Good evening, and moving right into our North Blandina project. As Dana Shepherd mentioned earlier, these units are really exciting for us. They present a new avenue for home ownership, and it's very important for us to continue getting these units that are really designed and livable for our clients. The construction was recently completed, and 4 of the 6 units are in escrow. We still have 2 outstanding units that we're looking to get closed here in the next week or two. So that's great news as well. This is actually the second time we've built this product, and we plan on re-employing it again. It is working very, very well. It's very well received through the community. And one of the benefits, or actually one of the blessings that we have with working with our homeowners, is it gives us a real-time feedback of the design that we put into these units, so that we're actually almost custom building them, directly so, but metaphorically so, because of the information that stream that we keep active with our homeowners as we're working them with them through our resident services program. These units are 2 and 3 levels, 2 and 3 bedrooms. They're all energy efficient homes, and pretty much everything we do now is definitely got a very close look, a very focused look on energy conservation and preservation. There's an HOA that has been established for the complex. It is a fee simple townhome style development, and it is as we say here, it's consistent with our guidance from our Pathway 1000 program. That's really also very exciting. It gives us a very broad opportunity to reach into a lot of corners and a lot of segments of these neighborhoods, and make sure that the developments that we're bringing online are consistent with the heritage as well. That's very, very important to us, that we make sure that we've got continuity throughout the North and Northeast, and we keep that continuity in place. And then lastly, Kimberly and I and our staff have been working quite a bit on a program that we colloquially call the Scattered Sites Program. It's a program that's designed to address some of these aged homes that might have some deferred maintenance and some other needs, that we can look at bringing them up to speed. We look at them through several lenses, not least of which is code upgrades, so on and so forth. And it is very exciting, as much as, and I won't get into all the detail here, that it presents a very broad opportunity for us to create some workforce type jobs that are positioned to be here locally. And so that's actually a focal point of this program, is to try to make sure that we're creating jobs as we're walking through these neighborhoods. So I won't bore you with the rest of those details. I know there's quite a few other folks behind us here, so I'll yield what little time we have left.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Questions, comments from the Oversight Committee members? Now, historically, what we would do if we were in person is, of course, we'd take our name tents, turn it on the side, but we're not. And I'm not going to make us raise hands in the venue that we are in. So you can merely unmute and then either make your statement or ask your question.
What are the price of this unit?
What are the prices of the units?
Sale price, yeah.
About $240,000 is how much they'll be selling for.
Marla?
Madam Horner, going back to the site on MLK and Rosa Parks, what is a punch walk?
That is when the construction is nearly complete on the project and the general contractor will begin walking through the project itself with the owner, as well as the rest of the construction team, to find any areas that need touch-ups or repairs to the units before we start leasing them up for the residents.
One last question. Was there any emphasis ever placed on more 3 bedrooms versus 1 and 2 bedrooms?
Those discussions preceded me. As I indicated a few minutes ago, I have only been with the organization for about a year. But Maxine Fitzpatrick, the executive director, was pretty well in tune with what the expectations were of the community. And there was a lot of community input with regard to the King and Parks project. So if the way that it was laid out and contemplated was vetted through the community process, as well as the funding availability for the project. You have to, when you build these types of projects, you have to make sure that they financially pencil out, and sometimes that will determine how many one or two or three bedroom units you can get out of it.
Thank you. Great. Any other questions from the Oversight Committee?
Dr. Holt, did you see Lisa's comment in the chat?
I did.
Okay.
Hi, Ms. Horner. It's good to hear you pitch tonight, and it's good to hear that Pathway 1000 is continuing to move forward, especially in this climate. How many units did the Pathway 1000 designate for home ownership? Can you recall?
So Pathway 1000 designated 1,000 units to be built in 10 years. We have approximately 300 units built. So we would like to get another 700, if we can, units of for sale. But those will be in the tune of like duplexes and getting multiple units on a single parcel. So we're really, and John, I'm sure you were part of this process too, in that the true wealth building for the Black community is through home ownership. So we are really turning our attention now to taking some of the scattered sites that no longer make sense for rental purposes and repurposing those into projects that can be used for the home ownership program.
Cool. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Dr. Bates, for your comment. I agree it would be helpful, since we do have so many new members to the Oversight Committee, which is excellent, if all the presenters could take, you know, maybe a minute to contextualize the work, to reference the project that you are going to be talking about. That would be fantastic. And also, I would say to all new committee members, don't hesitate to weigh in and get clarification. That's our process. Again, it's transparency, it's accountability, it's making sure that we understand what's happening. So thank you. All right. Thanks, Kimberly. Appreciate it. Appreciate the presentation and the information. Daryl, we look forward to meeting you at some point soon. We will continue. Next we have Reach, and they're gonna talk about Renaissance Commons. Before you do that, I realize that in my introduction, I don't think I clarified it quite correctly. When I said 15 minutes, I meant that that's the entire time that we plan on taking for the presentation. I'm gonna give you the same 15, but that means about 8 minutes in presentation with about 7 minutes for questions. So that would be fantastic. Hopefully you didn't lose me. If you can function with that in mind, that'd be great. So, Reach.
All right, great, thank you. Yes, Renaissance Commons, it's located at Argyle and Interstate.
Dan, can you introduce yourself, who you are?
Dan, yep. Dan Valliere. I'm Dan Valliere, CEO at Reach. And also on the call are from Reach are Pamela Benoit, Alma Flores, and Daniel Montgomery. And Pamela is going to speak in a minute. And I guess context on this, particularly for new people, this was a site that was owned by TriMet. So it's right, you know, right next to the interstate line and right by the stop at Kenton, the Kenton stop. And this land was purchased from TriMet, and TriMet was involved in the early days. Originally it had been a mixed income development, but that didn't prove feasible. But we ended up putting together a 189 home apartment building, affordable, and with community space. Let's go to the next slide. this is some photos of the building now. And we just are finishing, just finished construction. It, no one has moved in yet. So we're at the early stages of leasing. You can see the building from an aerial shot. You can see on the upper right-hand corner, that's a picture of a interior of a protected courtyard. So it's sort of a secured courtyard. It's outside, but you can only get to it through, you know, sort of through gated entrances. So it's more for residents in the building, a place people can come, kids, adults, anyone, and gather, but it's sort of protected. And then the other one at the bottom shows a public plaza. That is at the corner of Argyle and Interstate, kind of looking in. So there's a public plaza area, and then there's a courtyard area. There are 189 homes, as I mentioned, and just the breakdown real quick, since that came up, 53 studios, 71 one bedrooms, 47 two bedrooms, and 18 three bedrooms. So, and this committee did give us input on adding three bedrooms, which did happen as part of the process. We ended up increasing that. I will, yeah, just the good news is that we have temporary certificate of occupancy as of June 2020. That means that the construction is basically completed. There may be small things done, but it's ready to be occupied. So that's really exciting. So leasing is underway. No one has moved in yet, but Pamela is with us and we'll give a quick overview on the leasing. Good evening. Next slide. We can go to the next slide too. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Dan. Good evening, everyone. Happy to be here this evening and to have an opportunity to talk about Renaissance Commons, this 189 homes in such a vibrant part of our city. So we have been working on the lease-up process for quite some time now. We have an office that's opened in the Vanport Plaza Center, which is, you know, very convenient. There's great transportation and parking there. We have a team of four people working there. To date, we have reached out to over 900 people on the preference list. That's about 55% of the total. We have 67 applications in process. 19 of those have been approved for move-in, and we will have the first residents moving in tomorrow, July 10th, to Renaissance Commons. Yes, great. We're really excited about that. And this is also a tax credit property. So there is a lot that goes into the eligibility requirements and making sure that residents comply. Fortunately, we do not have a December 2020 deadline, but we do want to get as many units occupied by the end of the year as possible. And our goal is to be fully leased up in the spring of next year. So any questions about the lease up?
This is Gabrielle, and I have a question. What is the timeline to reach out to the 45% remaining on the preference list?
I wouldn't say that we have a an exact date. So having reached out to 900 people already, and that includes everyone who has had a determinant rating on the preference policy list, plus some. And as we work through those, then we will be reaching out to the remaining if necessary. Because we only have 189 units to lease, and we've contacted 954.
Thank you. So if someone, is there any communication that goes out to the remaining individuals on that wait list to let them know that it's already been leased? Is there a way to roll them over to another list? You know, I'm not familiar yet with that process.
So this list is going to also be utilized by the King's Park, and also, is Bridge also still using the same list?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
So, Gabriella, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Any other questions? Well, we can move on to the next slide. And I would imagine that Alma Flores, our Director of Housing Development, will give us some updated information on construction.
I was slated to do it. Alma is here though. So if Alma, you want to add to it. I know we're also running out of our 8-minute allotments. I want to be respectful of that. The data is here on the equity goals. Alma, you want to?
No, go ahead, Dan.
Okay. So this is the data I will read through.
Dan, you're breaking up. So Alma, if you could take it, that'd be great.
So right now in our construction, we're tracking about 33 to 34% participation by disadvantaged minority women-owned emerging small businesses. That includes 11 minority-owned businesses and 8 women-owned businesses. To date, there have been 10 contracted businesses located within the northeast Portland area. So in terms of meeting our equity goals, we've been doing a good job of tracking those and meeting our own goals and that of PHB and others. In terms of the breakdown related to apprenticeships, over 57% of the journeyman hours have been maintained by minority journeymen. That makes up Black, Asian, Hispanic, and other, as well as Native American. 42%, over 42% of the apprenticeship hours were directly by minority apprentices. And then over 22% of those hours were by female apprentices. So obviously we're not doing well enough on the female side and maybe some of the other minority apprenticeship categories, but we're certainly above many other projects in the region. We're happy to report that. I know if there are any questions specifically.
Yes, Oversight Committee members, do you have any questions? Alma, is this work, you don't have to get into it at the moment unless you have it in front of you. I would love to know how this, how these percentages are disaggregated, as into what kind of work these the people were able to be doing that were involved in the process. So that'd be excellent.
We do have disaggregated data by racial categories as well as the type of work for each. I believe that report is given to PHB monthly by our contractors. And what I have in front of me is just the culmination since of last month of those hours by race and by category. Happy to share with the group. I don't know if we want to spend that time here going over each one.
No, like I said, I'm not asking for us to do it tonight, but I do want to see it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. You share that.
Alma, I'll work with you and Jill to make sure we get it out to the Oversight Committee.
Sounds good. Leslie. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions from the Oversight Committee? Well, thank you. Appreciate it. We will continue, unless there was anything else. Did we cover everything for REACH?
Yep, the last slide had 3 last points that people can read, but I think we are good.
Yeah, well, you've got 4 minutes if you'd like to use it.
Okay, well, yeah, then I'll just highlight that we have two community spaces in the building that I mentioned. So one of them is a community space that's sort of secured in the building, so you'd only gain access to it through the resident entrance door that's secured. But the second community space is one that does have a door out to the street. It's also a secured door, but can be opened so that people could come in directly into the community, second community room. And we are gonna be gathering input from residents as they move in as to what kinds of community activities and events or services even could be operated in there. We've had some early discussions with various nonprofits and other community organizations about services they could operate in there. There wouldn't be rent charge, it would be, you know, free services, things that could be done for the community in there. But we could have long-term partners that maybe set up in there and do things on an ongoing way. So that is something we're gonna be gathering input over the next year. And if anyone on this committee, I know Marlon, we've talked about that before, we'll be seeking you out. And if anyone else on the committee has input for us on that community space, it's a flexible space, and we'll be trying to bring community programming in there.
Appreciate that. Thank you. One of the challenges I can anticipate with our present COVID reality will be what community spaces look like.
True.
Much of the planning was prior to this current reality. So adjustment with all facilities, including how laundry rooms are utilized. So coordinating that is going to be just unique challenge. So we are interested in seeing how that all unfolds. All right, next up is Bridge. And again, 15 minutes, about 8 minutes to present and 7 minutes for questions. Bridge, you are a go.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm Sherry Graw. I'm with Bridge Housing. You guys probably remember Trina Whitman. She was the previous project manager on this building. She left Bridge in December to take her family, move to Costa Rica for 6 months. And I recently caught up with her, and although it didn't go the way anybody had planned, she still had a really good time, and she just wanted me to say hi to everyone. So Songbird is, it was named for the rich jazz history in the area. That was kind of the reason behind the name. And it's a 61 unit affordable housing building with, it has 40 project-based vouchers, and that includes 10 PSH units and the rest 20 preference policy units. 9 of those are one bedrooms, 34 are two bedrooms, and 18 of those are three bedrooms. And the three bedrooms have two bathrooms. That includes one manager's unit. And so you can see some photos up there. Those are a little outdated. We are right about 95% complete right now, and the building is just turning out really beautiful. We were scheduled for TCO the end of June, and right now we're at the end of July. So we had about a 1 month delay due to COVID. We had some issues with manpower, and most of the issues were with the suppliers, and it was hard to get the deliveries. There's a lot of things on back order, stuff like that. So we've, Colas Construction is the general contractor, and we've been working with them to move through those challenges quickly, and they've been doing a really great job. So again, we're scheduled for temporary certificate of occupancy at the end of this month, July, and then we'll do our punch list stuff and looking probably at substantial completion in August. And so we're hoping to start moving people in around the end of August and be fully leased by November or December. It is only 61 units, so we're being optimistic. We think we can hit that target. It's a tax credit lift and 4% deal. So really motivated to hit that December 2020 target. We started leasing. We started May, June, sending out flyers and reaching out to preference policy. And we have an interest list as well that we've gathered. Bridge did a lot of outreach to the community, and that was before my time. And so we have quite a extensive interest list that we've been reaching out to. And it's been going really well, from what I understand, of our leasing team. I will just say that we have some really great amenities. I didn't put that on here, but I'll just throw out there that we actually have air conditioners in the units. So we have PTACs in the living rooms, and that's a nice thing to be able to offer. We also, through our outreach, we heard the community, things like color palette. They wanted a warmer color palette. So I think we did a pretty good job on the design of the building, and stoops and balconies were important. A barbecue area was important to the community. So we have a really great, nice little barbecue area that is ADA accessible as well. And we have quite a bit of bike storage, separate bike storage area. We are also locally sourcing artwork. So we're in the middle of doing that. And if we could go to the next slide, we're on target for our MWSB participation, and we can also supply that information. COLAS and works with PHB to track that, so we're happy to provide that if you'd like our numbers as well. And we're actually, that says 90% complete, but we're right at about 95. So we're in finishes right now. Exterior of the building is wrapping up. Our playground is installed, and it looks really great. We're really excited about it.
Thank you, Sherry. Is that the end of the presentation?
Yeah, I think that's about all I had. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Excellent. Questions from the Oversight Committee? Okay. And again, my question and my ask would be to everyone in regard to the disaggregated information. That would be great for us to know. Thank you so very much. We're moving right along. Wow. Okay. Our next presenter is Habitat for Humanity. And I will say the same to you around the 15 minutes. We've got about 8 minutes to present, and then leaving some space for some questions, which my historic oversight committee, who's usually very inquisitive or engaging or maybe dealing with a little of the July overcast dynamic. Maybe that's what's going on tonight. But 15 minutes, so to you.
Great. Have a day. Thank you, Dr. Holt. Thank you, Oversight Committee, for some time on your agenda. I'm Steve Messinetti. I'm the director at Habitat for Humanity Portland. And I'm going to be speaking of two projects that are homeownership projects that Habitat's been the, we're the builder and the developer, and also work very closely with a number of partners, including Proud Ground, African American Alliance for Homeownership, the Portland Housing Center, and PHB to implement these projects. And I'd actually like to reflect back for a second and just appreciate the Oversight Committee, other Black leaders in our community, especially folks from PCRI and AHA, who have been advocating for decades against the structural and institutional racism in our communities, but specifically for advocating for these funds to be dedicated to helping African-American families, especially the funds that are helping families buy homes. You all know that homeownership is one of the keys to wealth building in our country, and you probably also know that African-American families own homes at about half the rate of their white counterparts in our city, which is really a disgrace. And Our team did the math this week and looked at what that would mean to fill that gap, and that would mean about 4,000 households, African-American households, buying homes in Portland in order to fix that gap. And so our hope is that this is just the start of this work as we help 100 or so homes, families get into homes. Of course, 4,000 families will take a lot of money, but actually it's not as much as the Metro Regional Housing Bond, so it's not out of reach at all. So it's an honor to be working with you, and I'm going to give a quick update on our two projects. So the first is a site, if you can go to the next slide. It's on the corner of Olin and Lombard, just north of the University of Portland in the Portsmouth neighborhood, not far from Columbia Park. And this is a 12-home project. Each of those buildings you see there have six homes in them, all three-bedroom, 1,200-square-foot, two-bath homes. There's two homes on the first floor of each unit that are fully accessible homes for families that need accessible housing, and then two three-bedroom homes on the second floor and two three-bedroom homes on the third floor. And these homes are into that drywall phase, so moving into finish phase, and are on track to be completed next month. As I think Dana reported earlier, 10 of the 12 families for this site have been identified, are excited about moving into their homes, and are pretty much mortgage ready to buy their homes. What's unique about Habitat, or about these projects specifically, is that our target really is households that are under 60% AMI. Someone was asking about that earlier. And what that means for us is these homes are available to families that make as little as $30,000 a year. And I'll speak a little bit of how we make that happen in a minute. You can go to the next slide. So here's one of the families. This is Dolores, and she'll be moving into one of the homes here with her granddaughter, who's pictured here, along with her nephew, who's 10 months old. So they'll be filling up that house. And go to the next slide as well. We have a few quotes from families. This is also Anthony, who will be moving into the Olin project with his two daughters. I actually want to read Anthony's quote because I think it's really powerful and relevant. He shared with us, "They say that a kid who has a home seems to succeed. I grew up on 11th and Mason. I'm single dad raising two daughters, and I'm trying to give them a better life, a better chance. When I looked into Habitat, it was a perfect fit for me. Getting into this condo has been a big dream of mine for a long time. It feels great to know that I can purchase a home and have a safe environment for my kids. They will have their own rooms and it'll work out perfectly. I'll be the first one in my family to own a home. And when I move in, I'm gonna FaceTime everyone I know and say, you guys see this? You guys see this? I'm here." Next slide. So we're thrilled for Anthony and of course all the families that are ready to move in on Olin site. At the Kilpatrick site, which is just down the road from there, right on the corner of Kilpatrick and Interstate, right on the Max Line near Kenton Park, we also are in the similar phase of building the first 12 homes, and this is all 12 homes are in that one building on the top right here. So that's 12 homes with four homes on each floor. Those wide, large windows are actually sliding glass doors, and there'll be balconies out of the living room in each home. And that's the first phase of that project in which seven of the households have been identified. We still have to identify the last few. And it's on a similar schedule, about a month after, actually, so probably September, it'll be completed, and we'll start selling and moving folks in immediately after that. This project also has a second phase, and just today, we actually poured the foundation on the second phase, which will be a similar building, three stories, that has 18 units. And half of the units in this whole project, 30 homes altogether, but half of the units in this project are two bedrooms, and the other half are three bedrooms. The first phase, if you look at that third floor, those three-bedroom homes have the third bedroom upstairs. So they're kind of like a townhome with a bedroom and a bathroom on the third floor. Of these, the average income of the buyers for these homes is about $45,000. So some of them are as low as $30,000, and then incomes go up to almost $60,000. Their first mortgages on their homes will be as low as $100,000 at the lowest income, and then up to about $250,000 for some of the same units. The way we do that is through bringing additional subsidy to the projects. Next slide. Here's another one of the families moving into this site is John, who's moving in with his brother and then his nephew, as well as his rather two sons that are 7 and 12. So you can go to the next slide. Oh, here's Deborah also moving in with her future homeowner shirt. So one of the things unique also is all of these families have come out on a few occasions and helped build on the homes together. So they're already getting to know each other. And then final slide. This was mentioned earlier, but the additional leverage that makes these homes affordable, a number of these families have been paired up with the Wells Fargo Lift Down Payment Program, which was about $20,000 per home. Oregon Housing Community Service has down payment funds that Habitat is able to allocate about $15,000 per family. Federal Home Loan Bank has a program of $10,000 to help with down payments. Habitat also manages individual development accounts, so that's a match savings account in which families can save up, which is really helpful towards their closing costs. And then we also get an award through HUD, a federal grant, through the Self-Help Home Ownership Program, and those funds can be used for the infrastructure work on the projects. And then we also do some fundraising from individuals and corporations and so forth to help fill in any further gaps. I'll close there and see what questions folks have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Questions or comments from Oversight Committee members?
So I don't have a question, but I'm actually blown away. This is absolutely amazing, especially the three bedrooms. I'm just speechless right now to see that you folks took the initiative and listened to us and built units to house generational families. And I'm also very appreciative of its affordability and the fact that you also did the work to garner funds to support home ownership. One question for you though, what is the average size of square footage size of these units?
Well, thank you, Mr. Holmes. The average size for the three-bedroom homes are right around 1,200 square feet with two full bathrooms. The two-bedroom homes are closer to 1,100 square feet.
So, Steve, there's a question from Felicia Tripp in the chat, and she wanted to know, are all of these home ownership units going to be part of the land trust model?
Yeah, good question. So they are all going to be permanently affordable. So this will be, each of these is a condominium project. So they are all owned collectively, like any condominium would be, by the owners of the site. And then there'll be a deed restriction recorded against the property that would accomplish that long-term affordability in partnership with Proud Ground. So in the future, if any family chooses to sell their house, they would work with Habitat and Proud Ground to identify the next buyer that's income qualified in order to resell it.
Thank you, which also means they would get a percentage of the profit, correct?
That's right, and that gets really complicated as we get into the details of how that works. Yes, they would get a percentage of the appreciation of the house, if you will. Number of those down payment assistances that we provide also expire and are forgiven. So they also get a decent amount of equity through those additional down payment assistance funds that get forgiven.
Excellent. Just want to add that in because we do have new members and weren't aware of all of that work and conversation that went into being in the space that we are. So,
this is Gabrielle. May I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
You just mentioned, so it was mentioned that the down payment assistance is forgiven and that builds up equity. Is there a length of time that the owner, it would need to be owner occupied for that to be forgiven?
It starts after the 15th year.
And then for clarity, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Steve.
So for the city funds in these projects, those funds stay in the house to keep it permanently affordable. So the $100,000 per unit is never forgiven, if you will. It stays in the house. The we mentioned Wells Fargo, $25,000, HomeStart, $5,000. All of those other down payment assistance programs expire anywhere between 5 years and 15 years in terms of their forgiveness. So in this case, it's different for each program, but the city funds in these projects actually stay in the project in perpetuity.
And Gabrielle, for our down payment assistance loans, the $100,000 that we have given out, those begin to be forgiven after 15 years. So at they go 50% at 15 years, and by 30 years, they're totally forgiven, which is a different pot of money. Mm-hmm. And I'll go over when we have the your orientation, I'll go over a lot of this information. So I know you guys are all kind of coming in cold, but if you have questions, be sure and ask them.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got about 2 minutes. John, I see you unmuted.
Yeah, what happens when the people who purchase these homes, when they decease in the home, what occurs then?
Yeah, so they would be all transferred to their heirs, whether it's other family members in their home or children. And that all happens, does not trigger anything in terms of the resale restrictions. And we've seen that. We've had quite a few homes that we've built 20, 30 years ago that have now passed on, and their children are living in their homes.
Okay. But within a short window, say if someone got into the home and died within 5 years, is that same
Yeah, that's written into the deed, so whatever period of time doesn't matter.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
By the way, maybe I'm not sure if you were getting at this, but one thing unique about homeownership is we celebrate increases in income for family members. So once they move in, they have a qualified income to get into the house, but all future increases, we don't check their income once they're in. That's something we celebrate.
Yeah, but you do have a lot of pre-restrictions going in, though, right, in terms of resale.
That's right, yes.
Just making sure that when you read the fine print, if you die, don't go back to Habitat for Humanities, or they can sell it or whatever. So
that's
within generational wealth creation, mm-hmm. family, so forth and so on. So I'm just checking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comment? We got about a minute. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the work. It is exciting to see things going forward and super excited to think about the deep affordability that goes along with the opportunity. Quick comment. I've got three children, and our oldest is now in the space where he and his wife and three children are looking to purchase a home. And I think about the barriers he has to climb and go through in order to be able to secure that. And I must admit, like Marlon, as I thought about people at $30,000 a year being able to purchase, that's just a phenomenal possibility as opposed to having to rent. And so appreciate the work on that. Thank you. All right, let's, our last presenter for the evening is of our partners, Proud Grant. And Diane, I believe it will defer to you. Same, 15 minutes, about 8 minutes of presentation, and then space for questions. So it's on you. Thanks. You're still muted.
Okay.
All right.
Good evening, Dr. Holt.
Good evening.
I really just, it's just a great honor to address all of you and follow all of these amazing colleagues who I know have been working so hard to create these projects and these opportunities. We're in a unique position, and I'm going to hand it off to Gina Woolley in just a minute, who is our owner's rep. My name is Diane Lynn. I'm executive director of Proud Ground. And to the new members, we're going to need to send you some basic information about the project. We kind of cut to the chase tonight about where we stand, but just to give you a quick overview, this project was in response to a PHB NOFA about 3 years ago in partnership with Habitat for Humanity. All of what Steve just said really applies in so many ways to this project. 64 units, 40 permanently affordable. They will never be sold on the market in the future. They'll always be affordable to people in the community. The AMI targets are very similar. We might have up to 18 units below 60% of median income, another 15 to 18 at 60 to 80%, and then there'll be a few three-bedroom units at 80 to 100, and again, these are all family-sized units, two- and three-bedroom units. 24 of these units will be at market rate, so it's a mixed-income project. There's parking, play area, right on the light rail system at Interstate and Alberta. It's energy efficient, and it's intended to be a mixed income community and an intentional community in this building. We will be reaching over 35% minority women-owned emerging small business goals. And I'm going to pass it now on to Gina, and she's going to give you a quick update of the status of the project right now.
Can you advance the slide? Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Dr. Holt, committee members, other colleagues. We've been working on this project, as most of you know, for a couple of years. We were literally right on the, at the end and ready to close. In March, on March 13th, the City Council approved the project unanimously and enthusiastically. On March 16th, we got, we had the pandemic kind of set in March, and then literally the day after we closed, there was a shutdown issued by the mayor. And at that point, Heritage requested that we pause. We were supposed to close in the second week of April. We were literally finalizing our closing documents when this happened. And so this project's a little bit different than many of the affordable rental projects. The affordable rental projects are moving forward because they have takeout financing that the investors literally provide with tax credits. So the banks provide the construction lending and the equity's there to take out to write down the overall cost. And so basically those projects can continue to be financed because there isn't the same risk for the bank. On home ownership projects like this, and Habitat's a little bit different because they do smaller projects than this would be, and they're financing most of their own construction. But in a project of this size and scale, which is about a $24 million project, we have to go out to the private market to get private financing for construction. And the takeout for that is the sale of the units. And so if the bank can't figure out, and I think Kathy's on the line, their underwriting standards would suggest that they need to be cautious because it may be more difficult to do takeout on affordable units in this kind of a climate than any kind of units, then things slow down. So that was why we paused, but the bank is we've been working with the bank for the last few months and trying to identify what it's going, at what point we can kickstart this again, where the bank has expressed interest in doing this deal. And what we're looking for, we went out and got commitments from all of our lenders. We have Lyft dollars in this. We have Meyer Memorial Trust dollars in this. We Oregon Community Foundation dollars. We have a TriMet TOD grant in this. All of our lenders understood that when the pandemic hit, it sort of upset the apple cart, and all of those lenders have agreed and did it very quickly to give us an extension through the end of the year to try to basically get through COVID, at least get back into a more normalized climate so we could close this deal. I think Diane's going to talk a little bit. That's kind of the update of where we are. We've worked with the bank since in the last th- a couple of months, and now these are the things that we're working on during the pause, which Diane will talk about.
Yeah, thanks so much, Gina. Could you go back one slide? So sorry. Back one slide. Yeah, we're, of course, because of not only the pandemic, we also have the impact of, you know, as you all know, the cries for justice and fairness, and that housing and homeownership is such an imperative part of that. We want to do everything in our power to get this project back on track. The team is pursuing other creative solutions for financing and project restructuring if we need to do that. The preference policy families, as you all are already heard from Steve, that are slated for the condos are enthusiastic about the product. We've got some work to do with the preference policy process. We've been working again with all the partners that Steve mentioned. The additional and very important $1 million additional subsidy that helped that PHB provided are going to bring down, as I mentioned earlier, the price points for several of the units, so we can really match the preference policy needs, client needs. And we have strong evidence, even since COVID-19, that our lending partners are still lending on mortgages. In fact, there's a little bit of a frenzy out in the market right now. Now, what will it look like in 2 years? And we are getting letters from both Umpqua and Home Street. And these are beyond the Habitat units. Up to 18 of them will again be financed in the same way that Steve just mentioned. The 60 to 100% of median income will be conventional financing through our lending partners. And I talked to both of them just yesterday, and they're enthusiastic about providing mortgages to income qualified families. What we need is the extension through the end of the year, more time to work all this out. We're dedicated to achieving the goals of this project. And we appreciate your support and hanging in there with us as we take the next step beyond towards bringing closure and breaking ground, where 45 to 50 jobs will be immediately underway on the site, and we'll be serving families in the Black community for literally generations to come. This slide is just a very brief highlight of the testimony, and I believe John was pictured, if I'm right, Steve, in the slides earlier. He spoke in front of City Council, and I won't read every part of this, but I think he really captured the need for this special project and the way in which it serves Northeast Portland, and the importance of the preference policy family. It's an amazing exercise we're all engaged in and really implementing and matching people that desperately, you know, deserve a chance to, you know, go back to the neighborhood of their historical ties, where they have historical ties. So captured this testimony from John Senior about his son buying a unit. And the last slide is just to thank you all, and happy to address your questions.
Thank you, Gina and Diane. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Questions, comments from the Oversight Committee?
Yeah, so I apologize that I also had some work run late, and I was not able to be there for PHB's presentation, but I have heard that they are extending the timeline, but I wasn't sure how. Was that through the end of the year?
Yes.
I'm sorry, this is Shannon. We've extended it through the end of this month. I intend to extend it to the end of this year, but I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity as the Oversight Committee to hear this presentation before I did that. Because it is Housing Bureau owned property. It is, the majority of the funding is coming from the Housing Bureau through the neighborhood, Northeast neighborhood strategy. So I felt as a courtesy, you should have this presentation before I did so.
So I thank you very much. And I took a really deep dive in the information that was sent out to the committee. And I'm a little concerned that there's not a deal here, that it like
either due to COVID or just due to the complicated structure between Lyft and PHP funds and land trust and land and a ground lease and the letters from Heritage Bank seemed to indicate that there was still some distance between the lending parties that needed to be negotiated before the deal could close. And we're past when you said that, you know, we're finalizing documents. I don't know, did that process, did the negotiation process just stop until this extension was received? I'm just, like I said, I'm just a little bit concerned that we're gonna extend this through the end of the month and then through the end of the year. And then, you know, everything's more expensive and we still don't have a deal. And then we need another extension. You know, I just want some assurance that there's a plan in place to get all of the lenders together to make sure that, you know, I mean, I know the bank is bound by a ton of regulation that goes into part of, you know, places where they can't move, and the same with Lyft, that's a general obligation bond. So there's certain things that have to be included in their documents. And I assume the same with PHP. And so it seems like the parties are just, they haven't quite gotten there yet. And so I'm concerned. I just want to know what the plan is to kind of to get there.
Well, again, I think we were, as Gina referenced, really on the brink of literally closing. We had passed our omnibus finance resolution on my board. The city council passed it. We hadn't closed that final tiny gap, but clearly there's no doubt that COVID-19 was the primary reason for the pause. And Kathy is on the line, and I defer, but I'm putting out there to this team that if we don't have an extension, we don't have any opportunity to pursue closing the deal, solving all the issues. We have none of the factors that you mentioned were getting in the way of coming to closure and breaking ground. We had resolved a whole lot of that stuff. Took a while, but we got there. And when you, as Gina described, home ownership in these condo projects are harder to do. There's no doubt about it. And I think several of you mentioned just how critically important it is and how much of a game changer it is to families. So is it easy or will it be to close this deal? Not easy, but I think we can get there. And I'm hoping that with the time that we have and the pandemic kind of playing itself out, we can get to the heart of what could really help us close this. And I do think there are entities out there that are really more engaged in what they can do to affect Black families in Portland in a different kind of way. I think the environment has changed in a positive way in that sense. So we're going to keep our nose to the grindstone and keep working our hearts out to make this project work so we can celebrate following up with Steve's and other projects and all the other wonderful work that's been done so we can really achieve the goals of the preference policy in North Northeast Portland.
Yeah, it would be great to know what that what the plan is to bring the parties together before the extension is issued through the end of the year. I'm just, like I said, it's reading the documentation that was provided. I can't help but be concerned for Proud Ground and for the project and you know, I don't know what the committee can do to help get that to an answer, right? Like, because the answer might be there's a gap between what everybody's deal breaker is, and that's an answer. It's not the answer that we want, obviously, but it is an answer. So, you know, whatever can happen to bring all of that together it would just be great to know what's been happening, because I know you said you went I wrote it down.
Let me be clear, Jillian. Sorry to interrupt, but let me be clear. All the other funding partners, as Gina said, automatically gave us an extension through the end of the year. OHCS, $1.6 million, not a hesitation. MMT and the Oregon Community Foundation, all good. Metro, Todd Grant, no problem. So all of that, the funding partners we contacted right away, and there was just not a single hesitation. I understand that PHP has a lot in this project, and I think what we need from the committee is to really support our efforts to get to a yes, to the extent possible. We'll do our level best to get there, but we need your support in the time it'll take and to see how the pandemic runs out. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of people have been affected by COVID-19. It hit us at a very critical point in time, and we just have to persevere and persist and get the job done.
Yeah, I guess my concern is looking at the requirements in the LOI that was sent out, and then looking at the letter from the bank that it's likely to be more restrictive later in the year. And I guess maybe I'm a little more pessimistic about where we're going to be in December with the COVID crisis. I'm already planning for distance learning in the fall. I think that's where we're going to be. And I don't know how to move the needle on this. And I would feel a lot more comfortable if there was a plan on how to move the needle on getting to construction loan close.
Well, I'm
assuming that you're going to need a new appraisal as well.
We've done complete appraisals already been done. All the legal docs were really almost completed to the 99 percentile. So there is a plan. And we need people with your kind of expertise to help us get there so we can celebrate a win. And if it's not in the cards, we'll cope with that. But I think it's incumbent upon all of us to push through and get this kind of project on the ground.
Thanks, Jillian. I'm going to have you hold any other thoughts just for a moment. Dr. Bates, you had a hand up.
Yeah, thank you. So my question is really for Director Callahan. I'm trying to be mindful of our status here, which is that we are not the funding committee. We're not the approver of, as I understand it, you're not actually asking us to approve or not approve this plan. You're apprising us of it and hearing our thoughts about it, but we were not the committee that the oversight committee is not the committee that chose to fund the project. We're not the committee that chooses to fund any project because that's not our role. And so I am trying to clarify in my mind what it is that we are being asked right now. If we are being asked to thumbs up your proposal to move to the end of the year, I am very confused about what our role would be in the project doing, in anything with Heritage Bank. I don't know what I have to say to them at all as a committee member. So I'm seeking clarity on what it is that we're being asked actually to say or do at this moment.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bates. I think it is reasonable to give the project some time to see if it can pull out of the situation that it finds itself in with the construction loan. There is not a lot of other opportunities that we have seen prior to this. I will say that Heritage was one of the only banks that was willing to, in my understanding of the project, even entertain the project. And as you know, the Housing Bureau already had to borrow against future resources to be able to fund a portion of the construction project. To try to get the construction loan to try to get it off the ground. And then once again, we put in an additional $1 million to try to buy down what we were seeing, especially after the homeowners association dues were apparent. So I do think it is a reasonable time for us to consider by the end of the year. I want to be very clear though, we need to come up with another plan, if not 50-20. Our commitment to this community was regarding home ownership. Mm-hmm. And I think that time feels reasonable to see if the project can make it. And if not, it also feels like a reasonable amount of time to give our team to discuss and bring you options for what happens after that. And sure. As much as I'd like to say I will control what happens in the economy or with the banking industry, but I wanted to give you all the courtesy before I raise that. Frankly, if this committee had said absolutely no way, pause this project now, it is dead as a doornail, I may make a different decision. I have not extended the reservation of funds, but I wanted to make sure that you heard what was going on with the project, had a chance to weigh in before I made that extension. And I do appreciate what Diana is saying about the other funders. The other funders do not have the commitment to the project that we have from the very beginning and the commitment to the community that we made. And frankly, it's property that is the Housing Bureau's property for the benefit of the community. So I did feel I needed to take extra steps with the amount of money, and I felt like I needed to come and talk to this committee and have you hear this, see what the information was directly from the bank. So, you know, I'm asking you to share your opinion. I don't know that I'm asking you to tell me what to do with the reservation of funds. I do think giving till the end of the year is reasonable. And frankly, right now, we don't have another plan either for the property or for the use of the funds. But by the end of the year, I think we could.
I just would love to see, again, respecting that this is not, we're not really the deciders here. I would love to see an actual decision flow chart and timeline that is very concrete for path A, path B, path C. So I agree. There's no other concept for the site right now. So at what date does a concept plan begin to be formulated around an alternative? At what date is it a, you know, if we are not at point D by month this is the next step that we're taking? Like, there's got to be some kind of decision tree here that has very clear timelines. Otherwise, you know, frankly, this is not, you know, there's a lot of this work that's been challenging since the very beginning of this committee, and we are often asked to add more, extend more, wait more, and we always come up to that time period and go, okay, let's, you know, we sort of softly let it roll forward. And I think that we need a very clear out timeline here. You know, in my view, to be honest, when this came up was end of Q1 and say bye, because I think that we are in extremely uncertain times economically. And frankly, I understand that this project is complicated, new, and innovative. I think that Black folks have been innovated out enough in the sphere of housing and urban development. As an urban planner, as a person who knows well this history, I think there's been plenty of innovation. And so at some point, the desire for any organization to do a new and unique thing to them, to try something for the very first time and to create a new model that is not really a model that is like by and for Black people per se. It's not like this is a Black community and created concept. Is much less interesting to me than getting the goal accomplished. And I think, you know, in economics, we talk about a concept of a sunk cost. And I understand that there's money that's gone into the thing, and there has to be a timeline that says that's a sunk cost, that money is gone, we don't get it back, but that doesn't weigh against our decision to move forward with something else. So I'm respecting that I'm not the decider of this role, but I would like to see a very clear decision tree with a timeline that allows actually for someone to come up with a different concept so that we don't have the same conversation again in December and go, oh, we still don't have another concept, we don't have another thing to do. Because I think this opportunity is just way, way, way too important. And I don't, you know, the specific opportunity of any particular organization doing a very specific thing is just less interesting to me than the actual outcome. So if that outcome isn't going to manifest, then we need to figure out a way to move forward.
I hear you, and we'll make a commitment to do that before the expiry of the extension. Dr. Bates, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bates. John Washington.
No, Dr. Bates just stole thoughts right out of my head. I mean, I was going to ask Shannon the same question, but it's all good. I got my answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other voices from...
Sorry, I just wanted to ask, would it be possible to have that decision tree and timeline before the expiration date comes up?
Why don't we bring you a decision tree and timeline at your next meeting? And what I would propose is before the expiration at the end of this year, that we bring you another alternative. But okay. But let's bring you that decision tree at your next meeting.
That would be great. Thank you.
It'll be in September. Thank you very much. I would merely echo what we've all talked about. This has been a nuanced project, and quite a bit of work and energy has gone into it. My hope is that we'll be able to push it over into success. The goal is always to empower as many families as possible to move into a place of homeownership. That's why we sit in this seat. That's why we do this work. That's why we ask the questions and engage like we do. The ultimate commitment, and this is important for me to say, the ultimate commitment from my perspective, is getting Black people into a position, people who've been historically harmed, the majority of folks who've been historically harmed in North and Northeast Portland, into a position of being successful for future generations. That's what my commitment is more than any project, and also more than any process, is that we hit the goals. And so that is not personal. It's never personal, not from my perspective, about who is doing the work or whatever entity. And we've had some issues at various times where it's gotten a little energized in our meetings, that it's never personal. It's not, in my mind, about who it is that's doing the work. It's about us accomplishing our goals. I'm sure we're all committed to that. So thanks, everybody, for the work you've done. Thank you for the investment in this space. Not easy to do and not easy to create. We recognize that, which is also why we have historically invested the opportunity and the extra funding to help push this thing forward. So I hope you feel that and hear that from the heart. All of the nonprofit presenters, I hope you hear that from the heart, that our goal is never to go after you personally or your entity personally. It is always about moving into our commitment to see family benefit. So, all right. Jillian, any update from the Williams and Russell project?
Not a ton of updates. I was not at the last meeting, but I do know that we had received several replies to our request for interest, and those are being reviewed by the committee and subcommittee. There were some, it was nice to see that there were some requests or responses that were interested in the whole project. There were also some responses that were from smaller organizations that were interested in participating, and hopefully I'm hoping that the Williams Russell oversight group or working group can match make a little bit with some of those smaller organizations. So more to come. The RFP, I think, is scheduled to come out in September, if I'm not mistaken. And then we'll be looking at and reviewing for developers and ideas for the 1.7 acre site.
Well, I'll just and add a little.
Let me contextualize. For those who are new to the committee or maybe want to say this, Leslie, I'll let you contextualize what the project working group is. Or Jillian, why don't you kind of contextualize, since you are the representative from the oversight committee that sits on the project group.
I was asked to represent the oversight committee on the Williams Russell project working group. And it is a 1.7 acre parcel that was previously taken by eminent domain by the city for the expansion of Emmanuel Hospital, now Legacy. And that 1.7 acres was to be built on within a certain time frame, and it still sits empty today. So between Prosper and Legacy and the city of Portland, they negotiated to give the land back for the benefit of the Black community in Portland. And that working group has been working really hard on determining what exactly does benefit the Black community mean, and what building should go there, and what should the programming be, et cetera. And so over and over again, the top priority has been housing and education. Those have always come up as on every survey we do as the top priorities, as well as community space, meeting space. So that will be, I'm sure, part of our RFP. And the committee has, I think, 16 members, and some are represent the community at large, and some, like myself, represent another group. So there's representatives. So Leslie is there, and Dr. Holt is also the chair of that committee, or the facilitator for that committee. And it's been, I think, we're in meeting, I think it's just over 2 years that we've been meeting. So we hope to have some interested developers before the end of the year. It'll be really exciting. I'm excited to see it.
I was just going to speak to the RFP. Mm-hmm. We do have a draft, and Manefra and I are working on that. And we do hope to have the RFP out early fall, We did have 10 respond. Well, actually, we had 20 respondents, but 10 of them decided that they were going to wait for the RFP. And as Jillian said, some had full teams that were already ready to go with a project in mind, and others had were wanting to join another team. So those of you that are part of organizations, if you are interested, the RFP will be out no later than the end of September. I'll say that. So,
which is really exciting.
Thank you, Jillian, for the update. Any comments or questions, Oversight Committee members? All right. Our last item on our agenda for the day is an update on the I-5 project from Marlon Holmes. There's really not a lot to talk to. It's going smoothly. There are no glitches or issues. It's just right on track. Marlon.
Sorry, I had to change rooms. My three-year-old is playing with his games. So current update is we are still formulating the mission and goals of the committee. Recently, I don't know if folks have heard the news. I believe the organization Albina Trust has withdrawn their support for the project. And in so doing, it's caused not a backlash, but the mayor's also pulled his support and some other figures in the community. However, the vision is still being built by the folks who are still part of the committee, and the project is going to move forward. It's a state-funded project. It's coming from Salem. And so we are working diligently to try to create the vision that everyone is asking for. So although we would have appreciated if voices stayed involved, some folks felt they needed to remove themselves from the current happenings. With that being said, it's still in the very early stages. Nothing has been fully developed other than we're still working on the missions, the goals, and the vision of the project, and also taking into account what the community wants and what voices have been saying about the project, which is folks are feeling there's a need to do a environmental study, which has yet to a full environmental study that hasn't been conducted by ODOT. So that is one of the major asks currently. And I do not believe that ODOT will push forward without making that happen. So that is where we are currently. If I've left anything out, Dr. Holt, please fill in.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You spoke to the values that are going to drive the work. And the first value and the top value that will influence all the other is restorative justice. So restorative justice, which is still to be completely defined, will drive the going work of the project. You mentioned those who had pulled out at this point. Metro is still involved. TriMet, we have three representatives from the various communities. Marlon Holmes from this community is involved. And then we have Dr. Amato, who is co-chair of the North Northeast CDI, who is a part. And then Bryson Davis, who's a co-chair of the project working group, who's also involved in the work. And so the effort has been to be as collaborative and cohesive as possible, tying together the work that's happening in North Northeast Portland, and to attempt to make sure there's a sense of seamlessness and seizing of opportunity for the benefit of the whole. More to come. Every day has its own new level of evolution. But there's much going on. So any questions from the Oversight Committee in regard to the I-5 Rose Quarter updates?
When was that project supposed to start? Do we know?
Sorry, say that again, Achilles.
When was that I-5 project supposed to start? Now that it's hell.
Are you talking about breaking ground or
actual breaking grounds, yeah, for 2021, 22.
Okay. Yes, the intent was to, they're at 15% design at this moment, and I don't remember the exact date for shovels in the ground, but nothing was and would be and will be done without continued robust community involvement. Yesterday was a meet the primes event. The two primes presented yesterday, and the selection process was involved today. I believe the announcement will happen. Is it tomorrow, Gina, or is it Monday that the announcement will happen?
We weren't informed.
Okay. Okay. Well, I know the announcement will be happening real soon. The primes that are the two finalists, both groups, just a great presentation yesterday. For those who didn't get a chance to see it, I was there. Gina is, the reason why I asked her is because she's part of a team that presented. And I think both teams could do amazing work. And I look forward to working with whomever that will be. So we'll keep this committee updated as it goes forward. With all the specifics and particulars. Any other questions from Oversight Committee members? All right, thank you. Well, our next meeting is scheduled for September 10th. And if we are still in this format, we will not be meeting at 7 p.m. We will meet again at 5 p.m. As we did today, and trust that will work for everyone's schedule. For those who participated today, as I began, let me close with, this is a meeting that is open to the public. It is not a public meeting, which means that the public has the opportunity to sit in, listen in, and watch what is happening with the work of the Oversight Committee. And it is driven by, the work of the Oversight Committee is driven by the commitments and the values as espoused by the Oversight Committee, which you can find information on Portland Housing Bureau's website, what our task and responsibilities are. Also, in our meetings, we follow pretty close to the agenda and the agenda topics that are outlined, and all of your comments are more than welcomed. So going forward, you can place your comments in the chat section or your questions, and as we have opportunity to answer and respond to them, we will do so. However, if there are questions, and there usually are, concerns and or thoughts beyond the scope of this work and or as this work goes forward, there are two things I would like you to do. Please email the Portland Housing Bureau and identify your question. And those things that pertain to the Oversight Committee itself are then directed at us, and we then can respond to it. Your voice is important. We want to make sure, again, this work is accountable and transparent. Our commitment, as I said earlier, is to make sure that we are helping to create affordable housing and affordable housing opportunities for those who've been displaced, impacted, gentrified. We want to make sure that this is real work and helping families for the long term. So, if there's any other comment from the Oversight Committee before I close, here's your opportunity to do so. Thanks, everybody, for being a part. I appreciate your work, your effort, and your investment. Thanks for everyone who participated and presented. Thanks for all the hard work you're doing to lift this up. It isn't an easy lift, but it's so very necessary. Together we go forward. Have a good night, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Please stay safe, stay healthy as much as you can, and we will see you soon. Bye-bye.